Allahu bin Samahallah al Aleph at the top. We learned yesterday two different braises that talked about how we derive from Sufim about what kinds of locusts are mutter, how we derive which ones are actually mutter. We have one braise that said that we had one braise that said that just you have after each of the four species it says Laminehu, and therefore that includes four other species. And then we had Tana Gvei Rabbi Shmuel, who went, who was more elaborate about it and talked about how you have klal and prat and various degrees of klal and prats, from which we learn different details about the characteristics that are important for species of locusts to be kosher versus the ones that are not. So the Gemara says, "My kamifagi Tana Gvei Rabbi, Tana Gvei Rabbi Shmuel." Where what's the actual point of machlokus of these two brises? The first one comes from Sifra on the pasuk, and it's called Tana Dvei Rav, because Rashi explains it's taught in Toras Koinim, also known as Sifra, and it's called Sifra Dvei Rav, even though it wasn't necessarily composed in his base medrash, but because it was familiar in his base medrash, everybody there was familiar with it, as opposed to Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel was only Rabbi Shmuel's Talmidim taught it, but not necessarily everybody else. So it comes out, by the way, from Rashi, that not necessarily, not necessarily a point of Rashi, when we said Tana Dvei Rav, we don't necessarily mean the yeshiva of Rav, we just mean what was taught in the yeshiva. So Dvei Rav would mean the yeshiva in general. The Meiri actually explains that it means that Rav actually composed it. In any case, so what's the actual machlokas? So the answer is, the machlokas is about the kinds that have a long head, like we talked about yesterday. You have some kinds of locusts that have a rounder head, more like, for example, the grasshoppers, that what we usually think of as grasshoppers. There are other bugs that have similar kinds of heads, for example, flies and bees and whatever, versus you have ones that have a long stalk-like head. So we said that. So what we said is the first braise, Tana Dvei Rav, didn't mention anything about long heads. The Chogav also doesn't have a long head, and therefore so Tana Dvei Rav Sogar. So Tana Dvei Rav holds like this: Asher lo ra'ayim klal. When we have the pasuk says that when it has jumping legs, then that's a klal. So anything that would have jumping legs would be included. So that would include many, many species. But then arba salam chargo chogav lemineiru prat. When it says the four species and after each one it says lemineiru, then that's a prat. So it means only those. So that would be klal of prat. So therefore, according to that Tana, therefore, all we have is a klal of prat, and a klal of mashim prat. So, therefore, we have the general rule: when you have a klal of prat, means that the klal includes only is limited only to what's in the prat. In which case, then why doesn't the Torah just say the prat and not the klal? The Gemara elsewhere deals with the point that if we had only the prat, we would have learned a binyan av from it to other ones. And like this, by saying a klal before, it tells us not to do that, to limit it only to the prat. So again, the first braisa, which came from Sifra, and therefore we're calling Tana Dvei Rav, which means that it was taught in the yeshiva. It was taught in the yeshiva in general, or it was taught in the yeshiva of Rav, according to the different opinions that we just said. So according to that, Bryce said, just said, it didn't focus on the characteristics of the different species. It just focused on the fact that the Torah had told us the four species, and after each one, Laminehu. So therefore, we have a klal, and we have a prat. Ashaloch ra'ayim, that it has jumping legs, as a klal. Arba salam chargo chogav Laminehu prat. So therefore, klal of prat, and b'klal alamashim b'prat. So therefore, we learn, according to the usual rule, that the klal includes only what's included in the prat, demine en, delav, demine loy. So therefore, only one of those eight species, four that are mentioned in the Torah, and four more that can be included from the word laminehu, are going to be included, delav, demine loy, not things that are not of subspecies of any of those. And therefore, according to that Tana, it would be, what are we going to include? Only what is going to be considered a subspecies, only something that's similar to what it says in the Torah in two ways. That it has the four simanim of our Mishnah, and also that in Rosh Oruch, that it doesn't have a long head. So in other words, according to the Tana of the first Braisa that we learned yesterday on Samachayim and Aleph, according to that one, any locust that has a long head, that doesn't have a rounded head, that doesn't have a rounded head, but rather has a long stalk-like head, would be non-kosher. The Tanadvei Rabbi Shmuel Sagar, whereas the Tanadvei Rabbi Shmuel, the second long elaborate braisa that we learned, holds Asher Loich Ra'ayim Klal, that we have when the Pasuk says that it has jumping legs as a Klal, any locust that has jumping legs would be included. Arba Solom Chagav Prat, but then Tanadvei Rabbi Shmuel learns that Luminehu Chazav Cholol, that the word Luminehu comes to include other things. So it's not just like the Tana, not just like the Tana of the first braisa that Luminehu itself is part of the Prat, rather Tanadvei Rabbi Shmuel holds that Luminehu itself constitutes a second klal. Therefore, we have klal of prat of klal. You have to done alachein aprat. And as we have the usual rule, when you have such a thing, then it means. So again, klal to begin with would tell you to include everything. The prat would tell you to limit it only to the prat in klal alamashal prat. The klal again at the end comes to tell you add other things as well that are similar to the prat. Umarabi called the dummy like the chadzad. Therefore, according to that Tana, we can include things that are like the four that I mentioned, even in only one way. So as long as it has the four simanim, we don't care whether it has a long head or whether it has a rounded head. Now Rashi explains the first Tana is going to hold that Luminehu can't be a klal, because he holds that, as the Gemara is going to now discuss, that you can't have a klal a proper klal unless the second klal is similar to the first one. So, for example, an example of a classic example of a klal, a prat, a klal, is, for example, the pasuk in Parshas in and Parshas Re'e tells us what you can spend ma'aser sheni. Asata kesed kol asher ta'avanach. Oh, you can spend the money for ma'aser sheni on anything that your soul desires. Then it meant that's a klal. Then it mentions four specific things: b'bokor, b'tzoyin, v'yayin, v'shecher, cattle, sheep, wine, and strong wine. And then it continues with kol asher tishochon avshecha and anything that your soul desires. So, therefore, so the klal there, the second klal is actually pretty much repeating the first one, but even if it's not repeating it in the same words, at least you have that it has a similar scope. As opposed to over here, the word Luminehu, the Tanakama holds, is going to tell it's not a similar scope, because it only tells us things that are similar to the minim that I mentioned. So that Tana of that first price is going to hold that the only things we can include are the ones that are similar, that are very similar, that not only have the four simonim, but also have rounded heads. As opposed to Tana Rebbe Shmuel holds that you can learn those Luminehus as a klal as well, and therefore we have a klal, a prat, a klal, and therefore he says that the ones with long heads are also fine, as long as they have the four simonim that we said that all kosher locusts have in common. Now, Tosfos brings up the point that why don't we say that there's another nafkamina between them? What about, so why don't we say other species of locusts that are not of those species? So let's say fine, not Rosh and Aruch, but if they have those four simanim and they don't have long heads, according to the first Tana, they should be also, because in Bechlal Alamashim Prat, we would include only the four that I mentioned in the Pasuk, plus the other four that the Tana mentioned that we learned from the Minehu. So why don't we say that that's the nafkamina between them? So Tosfos answers that because maybe in fact there won't be any species that has all five of these simonim, that has the four that we mentioned in the Mishnah, plus having a rounded head, that wouldn't also be a subspecies of one of the ones that it says in the Pasuk. So therefore, there wouldn't be a nafkamina by that, because Tosfos says, because there is no such species. Another possibility Tosfos says is that the chiddush is that Tanadvei Rabbi Shmuel is even allowing the long-headed ones, even though they're not similar to any of the four that I mentioned in the pasuk over here. So that would be the main nafkamina between them. Okay, Tosfos also earlier discusses the point. What about, is there also an argument between them whether it needs to have the name Chagav? According to Tanud Ve'rav, we said that you need... We said each of those four species mentioned in the pasuk is needed to tell us a specific species, Arba, Solom, etc. And the Minehu tells us a subspecies of them, but we didn't say, according to him, maybe that they have to have the general name Chagav, as opposed to Tanud Rebbe Shmuel, that said that Chagav tells us they have to be of the general species called Chagav. So that would be an afkamina between them. So Tosfos says that what it means is the same idea as they're answering over here, that. And all the ones, all the eight that the Tanakhama mentions, every one of them is under the name Chagav automatically. So therefore, so there's no nafkamina as far as that. Okay. Fine. So the Gemara asks, "V'holei jomi kol a kama kol a baster." But the question is, that, how can you say? So according to Tana Dvei Rav, we understand why we don't call it klal a prat or klal, because the second klal is a narrower scope than the first one. The first one is general and says ashaloich ra'im, anyone that has jumping legs, and the second klal, according to Tana Dvei Rishmal, is l'minehu, but that would limit it only to things that are considered a subspecies of the main species mentioned in the pasuk. But according to Tana Dvei Rishmal, how taka do they learn that as a klal a prat or klal? The first klal is not similar to the second klal. The first klal, the Torah is saying that it has jumping legs, which means so it's a very general thing. If it has those jumping legs, you can eat it, and if not, then not. Which would mean, in other words, they only need that simon of jumping legs, not even the other three simonim. Whereas the second klal, fine, even if we're going to say that minehu is not so narrow in scope, but still it does include things that have all four simonim, not just one of them, and that's not a valid klal or prat or klal. The answer is Tana Dvei Rav Shmuel, but klal or prat or klal gavna doyin. As a matter of fact, Tana Dvei Rav Shmuel holds that such a thing is a perfectly valid klal or prat or klal. And in fact, not only that, the fact that we have something mentioned in other places in Shas, that the fact that in other places in Shas, the Gemara does say that Tonad Veda Bishmal learns a klal or prat or klal of this kind, where the first klal and the second klal are not of different scopes, and you have a number of examples like that. Most recently we had examples last year in Zvachim, where the second klal is not similar, is of narrower scope than the first one, and still Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel allows us to darshan as a klal or prat or klal, mehacha, that's learned precisely from here, where we see that Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel does just that, but they consider l'minehu, even though it means they have to have all four simanim, is considered a klal which complements the first one, even though the first one, ashalech ra'ayim, includes only one simanim. Now again, the Tana Dvei Rav, the Braisa that we brought before from Sifra on Samachei Amud Aleph, disagrees with that premise and holds that for it to be a klal or prat or klal, the first klal and the second klal have to be of similar scope. And therefore he says this can't be a klal or prat or klal over here, this can only be a klal or prat, and therefore it's limited only to the four species mentioned in the pasuk plus the four subspecies that we learn from the Minehu. Fine. So that explains the machlokas between them. So again, the bottom line is the machlokas between them is a type of locust that has a long head that doesn't have a rounded head, but rather a long one. And the machlokas would be then whether that's included in the kosher species or not. In fact, there's a Mishnah in Masechta Edius that mentions that at one point in history, Yosi ben Ezer, this was the famous Yosi ben Ezer, the Nasi of the first Nasi among the Zugis. We have him in Pirkei Avos. He comes up here and there in Shas. So at one point he gave Edus in front of the Chachamim. He says, Ayokamsa, about a type of locust called Ayokamsa Dochan, which he says is Tahar, that you're allowed to eat it. So in fact, Guri Nashas, Rabbi Akiva Eger over here explains that, brings from the relevant Gemara in Avodah Zarah, that's exactly it. Rapapa gives an answer over there, the Gemara gives two answers over there. One of them is that in fact the species that Yosef ben Ezer was talking about is in fact one that has a long head. So now, until then, they didn't know it was kosher because they were learning like the Tana Dvei Rav, and now, Yosef ben Ezer a couple hundred years before Rav's time, but the point is these details were known already from Torah Shabbat Peh before that. So then, according to Rapapa's explanation over there, in fact, Yosef ben Ezer is telling them, like Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel, allow it also, even though it has a long head and its head doesn't look similar at all to the other species mentioned in the pasuk, because the fact is it has the four simanim and belongs to the family Chagav, whereas the other Chachamim until then had held that not. Then the Gemara gives another explanation over there of Rav Chiya Ba'ami, that no, they both agree that it's osur, but it's a question of that the wings there just barely cover the majority of it, and whether that's enough or whether it has to be ruba de minka, whether it has to be a noticeable majority. In any case, the point is, according to Rapapa at least, the machlokas between the two braises over here is actually a machlokas that goes back long before them, and we find Yosef ben Ezer testifying in front of the Chachamim that it is mutter, like Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel, whereas the Chachamim until then had held like the other braise. And again, according to the other explanation, according to Rav Chiya Ba'ami, we would say that nobody holds like that neither of those Tanoim, neither Yosef ben Ezer nor his Chaverim, held like Rabbi Shmuel in that regard, the long-headed ones are mutter, and the Machlokas is on another point. Okay. Now, so to continue this discussion of locusts, the Gemara says, Omar Mahar, we said in the Braise before, Ishmoy Chogav. Now, so we had, after Tonin Vreda Bishmal, had gone through all the potential simonim. We went through the actual four simonim. We went through what about if it has a bald head versus not a bald head, or according to the Aruch, we learned yesterday, Gabachas would mean a hump. We said, does it make a difference whether it has a tail or not? Eventually we said that no, a head, whether the head is bald or not, whether it has a hump or not, whether it has a tail or not, doesn't matter because the various species that the Torah, the first three species that the Torah mentions are different in those details and they're still all kosher. But we said, then Tanan Reda Bishmal had said, the last one, when it says Chogav, so they had said, Chogav does not mean a specific, species, like the way the Tanakhama had learned it. They said it means that it has to belong to the general class of Chogav. And then the Braise said, Ishmoy Chogav. Now, if you're telling me that it has to just belong to the general class of Chogav, Yocho Einbei Kolos Simonin Alolo, then you would think, even if it doesn't have any of those Simonin, you would think it's kosher. Tamad Lema Laminehu, that is why it finishes off Laminehu, which means Abshi Yehubei Kolos Simonin Alolo, only if it has all of these Simonin. Now, so the question is, what was the Braise thinking? Einbei Kolos Simonin Alolo, Mehech Tesi. What would be the logic, what would make us think that if it doesn't have any of those Simonin, it should be kosher just because it's called a Chogav? Arba v'charugol. See, the fact is, it said before that Arba, and it said Chargol, and in between them it said Solom. We learned yesterday, okay, that Solom maybe is not strictly necessary because it's sort of halfway between them, but in any case, the point is that once it says Arba and Chargol, and we have, as we learned yesterday, we have a Tzavah Shavah between them, that they have those four Simonin, how could we possibly think that that saying Chogav overrides that? And the answer is, Elixiv Solom, if in fact it didn't say Solom in the Pasuk Kibikamrit, then yes, you have a point. Once it says Arba and Chargol, then automatically we should say that it means that any other species can be kosher only if it has those four simonim. Hashtag Solom, but it does mention Solom, and as we learned yesterday, the fact that it says Solom is able to teach us that even that we talked about the point of Tanur Beit HaBishmal that it includes Roshei Aruch, that even though we said the Solom itself does not have a long head, but nevertheless, because Solom was completely unnecessary to say in the Pasuk, because we could have learned it from a Tzad HaShofar between the other ones, therefore we use it in Einin LeGufay, if you don't need it to tell us about the Solom itself, because we automatically know the Solom itself is kosher, then we use it to talk about a different kind, Roshei Aruch. So now, if it hadn't said, so now that it says Solom, and you're saying, Rabuya Rosha Oroch, and you're saying that it includes long-headed ones, Emele Rabbi Nami Kolderu, then maybe it includes other things, even if it doesn't have all the simonim. Kamash Malan, therefore, the Pasuk adds after Chogav, it mentions Laminehu. No, the fact is you do need the four simonim tyrant. So we can learn from Solomon, according to the Tanya Veda Bishmal, that the long-headed ones are fine, even though indeed they're not similar to either the Arba, the Chargol, or the Solomon, or the Chargol. That's fine. But no, we can learn that from the fact that it said Solomon, which otherwise was unnecessary, but never. We can't, on the other hand, use that to learn things that don't have the force in monetara. That we learn from the word laminehu that it's not so. Okay. One more thing we need to deal with is Maishna Hossam, the Amrit Solom Zerosh and Chargol Zenipo. In the first Braisa that we brought from Tanad Beirav, we said it went and translated the names of the species in the Torah into their Aramaic equivalents, and it said that it said Arga Zegoivai, the Tanad Beirav Shmuel had said the same thing, but then the first Braisa from Tanad Beirav had said the Solom is identified with the Roshan and the Chargol is identified with the Nipo. Whereas Tanur Dvei Rabbi Shmuel had them the other way around. Solom is the Nipo, and then Chargol is the Roshan. So which is which? So Maishna Hasam Damit Solom is the Roshan, Chargol is the Nipo. So why is it that in the first Braisa from Tanur Dvei Rabbi, we identify the Solom as the Roshan and the Chargol is the Nipo? Or Maishna Hacha Damit Solom is the Nipo, Chargol is the Roshan. And whereas the other bride, the Tanur Dvei Rabbi Shmuel, has them the other way around? And the answer is, Malkiasur. It's just each one taught the way things were called in his place. They both agree what the identification of the Solom and what the identification of the Chargol is, but they just did, they in one place they called the one kind Nipol and the other kind Roshan, and in the other place they called them the other way around. But there's no actual machlokas between them as far as that. This is why, by the way, nowadays in Sfarim on these topics, instead of just giving the popular names of things, which those change from place to place, they try as much as possible to, they often try to give the scientific names for them, which at least in principle, those should remain unchanging everywhere in the world, and therefore there'll be less uncertainty about what it is. So, okay, so to finish off this discussion of Chagavim, Rashi brings up the point, do they need Shechita? Rashi says that no, Chagavim do not, the kosher species do not require Shechita. Because the Pasuk says like this, those Torahs are behemoth of our earth, this is the Torah of the animals and the birds. All the living creatures that swarm in the water, and all the creatures that swarm on the earth. So he brings from the Sefer Halachas Gedolos from one of the early Goinim. So behema means exactly what it sounds like, the land animals. Oif means actual birds, so not sheretz oif, not the swarming small creatures such as locusts, but rather full size birds. Those both require shvita. We learned earlier in the Masechta, precisely because it mentions Behema and Oif together. But then it continues, the ones that swarm in the water, which is the fish, those, as we learned earlier, don't require Shechita. And since afterwards it mentions L'chol Nefesh HaSheretzes Al Ha'aretz, that would mean the Chagavim, and therefore that would mean that that Chagavim don't require Shechita either. So Chagavim don't require Shechita, and Tosfos brings other proofs for that point. So it's clear from all over Shas, in fact, that kosher Chagavim don't require Shechita. There's an interesting question of whether you're allowed to eat them live. The Rambam says you would actually be allowed to eat them live. Actually, the Rambam brings a different source for how we know that you don't have to shech them. The Rambam says you would actually be allowed to eat them alive. There's no Eivim and Achai. Tosfos brings something similar along those lines as well, although Tosfos says, listen, you have an issue about the Shaktsu, you're not allowed to do something disgusting. What you would be allowed to do, Tosfos mentions elsewhere, you could, for example, you could take a piece off since the Eivim and Achai doesn't apply to Chagavim, you would be able to cut a piece off it and then eat it. That rinse it first and then eat it, but that wouldn't be considered about the Shaktsu, and such a thing would be allowed, again, because they don't require Shechita. Okay. Now turning to the next kind of that's it as far as Chagavim. So the bottom line is that we have there's four simonim of Chagavim. We had Rabbi Yossi saying that it has to bear the name Chagavim as well. We were discussing earlier, according to most Rishonim, Rabbi Yossi and the Tanakhama are not disagreeing. Rabbi Yossi is just complimenting what the Tanakhama is saying and saying that all the species that we're talking about are under the general category of Chagav. We had a machlokas between two brises over here. And again, apparently the roots of that machlokas, according to some opinions, go back even earlier about whether long-headed species of locusts are kosher, if they have the four simonim, but they're not similar to any of the ones mentioned in the pasuk in the shape of their head. And again, as a practical matter, nowadays, most communities of Jews don't eat locusts because we've lost the masorah of which ones are kosher and which ones are not. The major exception nowadays is Yemenite Jews. Turning now to the next kind of life form that's mentioned in the Mishnah. The Mishnah said of a dogum koshiyashle snap of kaskeses. As far as among fish, anything that has fins and scales is a kosher fish. So turn on a bottom, we learn in a brisa. So suppose the fish does not right now have those simonitara, but also the gandala achazman, but it's going to grow them as it gets bigger. Then a sultanis va afyon, for example, the sultanis and the afyon. How is a mutter? Such fish are mutter. What are the sultanis and the afyan? So Rashi translates sultanim as sultanis as tunina, which is tuna fish. On the other hand, there are Meforshim who explain that actually that translation of Rashi is meant to go on the next thing, which is at the top of the next onward, where we have a fish called atunas. So atunas would be tuna. According to that, then sultanis, they say might be herring. Afyon would be some other kind of fish. So these are fish that are born without simone tara, but then they grow them later on. Meforshim bring up the point that when it came to Chagavim, we learned yesterday that even if they're not born with the simone tara, then that's fine. We learned from the pasuk Asher Loi Chraim with the alternation between Loi with a aleph and Loi with a vav, that it means even if they don't have them now. What about by fish? Where do we have such a drasha? And the answer is because since the pasuk says B'chol Asher Ein lois, snap of a cheskesis, anything that does not have fins and scales, we find in some places in Shas where the word ein loy is darshaned as ayin olav. We take the aleph and substitute an ayin for it, which is a very common thing in drushas of Chazal. So therefore, the word ein results in the word ayin, which means investigate. So investigate whether this creature is never going to have fins and scales. If your investigation finds out that it will have them in the future, or it did have them in the past, as we'll talk about in a moment, then there's still kosher. So we talked about the other day also, this comes up also as far as what we talked a few days ago about fish eggs, about fish roe, which ones you're allowed to eat or not. We talked about the simonim of the shape, and whether they're mutter or not. You do have here. I mean, fins and here. You know, we've been learning about birds and about chagovim that's not so simple to tell which ones are kosher and which ones are not. With fish, even though on the face of it you have fairly straightforward simonim, fins and scales, in fact it turns out not to be so simple. Tosfos earlier on Daf Samach Daled refers to a fish called barbuta, which in some places. So Tosfos says we don't actually know. So Tosfos actually mentions over there that we can rely on the simonim of the fish roe because the shape of it matches what the Gemara said over there is true of kosher fish. Therefore, we can eat it. There was actually quite controversial in the times of the Rishonim about this fish, the barbuta, whether in fact it is mutter. There were some places where they had the minhag to eat it, and other places where the Rishonim write about that anybody who eats it is not going to be able to eat from the levyos and lost in love because it's a non-kosher fish. So there's quite a bit of uncertainty about it, and it seems that. There, this is an example of one of those things where different places call different fish by the same name. Even nowadays, you have problems like that sometimes, which is again why it's better to, where possible, to, when you have lists of kosher fish or whatever, better to look up the scientific name rather than just the common name of it, because sometimes you have names differ from place to place. Anyway. Continues the Brisa. Yesh lo yachshav. What if the other way around? The fish has scales and fin, has fins and scales now. But also lashirim the shalsha olam ha'mayim. But it loses them when it's taken out of the water. We're going akunas va'afunas kasfitias va'achsefias va'atunas. Rashi says these are all names in Persian. Of various kinds of fish. Others say that maybe they're actually names from. Others say they're maybe actually names from Greek. So anyway, how they're mutter, then also they're mutter because they have the fins and scales in the water, even though they lose them afterwards. So tuna is actually an example of that. There are certain kinds of species of tuna that have very loosely attached scales, and they tend to lose them when they're taken out of the water. One possibility as far as ksaftias or axphias is some people say might be related to the Greek word xiphias, however it would have been pronounced in Greek, which means swordfish. And it used to be, there were Jewish communities who used to eat swordfish, and even it used to be more commonly accepted as a kosher fish. Eventually, in the last couple of decades, they were beginning around 1950, they started raising questions about whether they really do have scales or not, and therefore kosher consumers stopped eating them, and Rabbanim stopped being matcha them. But before that, there had been places where they held that in fact they do have scales in the water. I remember once reading a story, something along the lines of where a Goyish official challenges a Rav about that. He says, you Jews eat swordfish, but how could you if it doesn't have scales? And the Rav explains, because it loses its scales when it's pulled out of the water. And the official says, I never heard of such a thing. To make a long story short, the Rav throws a scarf into one of the nets. It takes his son along, throws a scarf into one of the nets where they're catching these fish. And sure enough, there are a lot of scales in there. So you see that as they're struggling, as they're being caught, then they lose their scales. So again, there is some basis for that, but in general, nowadays, that heter is not accepted. There is also, by the way, quite a bit of discussion what exactly counts as scales for this purpose in halacha. You have a lot of different kinds of protrusions on the fish's body, which in modern science and in modern ichthyology are considered scales, but in halacha not necessarily so. But Ramban explains that since the word for them in Hebrew is kaskasim, and the Gemara is going to explain soon that comes from a word in Lashon Kodesh that means scale armor, so just like a coat of armor can be put on and taken off, the same way the scales have to be removable without tearing the skin. And all the later poskim accept that point, and therefore if the scales are not removable without tearing the skin, then they're not considered scales in halacha. So that, for example, that knocks out things like various kinds of sharks and I think certain kinds of catfish and whatever, which have scales, which have what modern science would consider scales. But according to that, halacha doesn't consider scales. They talk about what happens if you can only remove them with a knife, what happens if you need to leave them out in the sun or something for a while to dry. And basically the consensus seems to be that as long as they're removable somehow without tearing the skin, then it's fine. The Gemara continues. Tanan Hassan. Now we learn a Mishnah in Masechet Nida, and how it comes in Nida is because you have various examples that the Mishnah gives. The Mishnah gives examples where you have one thing necessarily presupposes the other, but not the other way around. It starts by talking about halachas of maturity, of the physical signs of maturity, and then it digresses to talk about similar examples in other areas of halacha. So a Mishnah says there in Nida, kol sheyesh kaskeses yesh lo snapper. Any fish that has scales automatically we know that it has fins. V'yesh lo snapper v'em lo kaskeses, but you have the other way around, the fish that have fins and don't have scales. So yesh lo kaskeses yesh lo snapper dog tamei. If it has both, then it's a kosher fish. Yesh lo snapper and the kaskeses dog tamei. But if it only has fins and not scales, then it's a dog tamei. And we talked about when we learned the Mishnah last week. We talked about deeper meanings behind that from the Rebbe and from the Rebbe's father, that the fins represent the ability to be mechadish in Torah, and the scales represent a person's emuna and his devotion to Torah, and therefore if he has only the scales, he just has that devotion to Torah, eventually he'll develop the fins, the ability to be mechadish as well, but the reverse is not true, or that the scales represent learning Torah, that the scales represent doing mitzvahs and the fins represent learning Torah, and again, you can have, unfortunately, a person who learns Torah but doesn't translate that into performance of mitzvahs, and that's no good. Whereas if a person does mitzvahs, inevitably he's going to have learned Torah, because if nothing else, he has to know what he's doing in order to do the mitzvahs properly. So those are different explanations of this deeper meaning behind having fins and scales, and that if you have scales, you automatically have fins. Tosfos brings up the point, how did the Chachamim figure this out? And Tosfos mentions, also we learned a few days ago, we said that there's 700 types of non-kosher fish. How did the Chachamim know such things? You're going to say because Adam gave names to the animals, where do we find it? He gave names to the fish. He gave names to the behemoths and to the animals and to the birds. And the Medrash says also he gave a name to Hashem as well. He's the one who first called Hashem Adonai, but we don't find that he named the fish. So first Tosfos says, first of all, there's a ribui in the pasuk that maybe in fact he did name the fish as well, so therefore Adam may have transmitted it as a tradition, which eventually came down the Chachamim. If not, then Tosfos says the other possibility is halacha l'moshe m'sinai. There's a fascinating thing that came up in this connection. The Tosfos Yomtev, is mainly known for his Pirush on Mishnayos of that name, Tosfos Yomtev, but he also wrote other Sfarim. One of them was, he was a very famous Rav in his times, and in Prague and in Vienna and in Krakow, one of the great Rabbanim of his times. So he wrote a lot of Sfarim. One of them is a commentary on, called Madana Yomtev. So he has in there an interesting thing. He says that at one point, he says that Rav Aaron the doctor brought him a specimen of a creature which they called, it was called in his language, Shtinkus Marinus. Marinus means from the sea, and Shtinkus is the name of the creature. It's related to the word skink in English. So he describes it. It had scales. It had four legs. It had a wide head, which in Shulchan Aruch mentions that kosher fish have wide heads and non-kosher fish tend to have more pointy ones. So it had a wide head, but it had scales. It didn't have fins. It had four legs. And Mr. Aaron explained to him that this creature is found, he calls it in the Yam HaSfardi, which means the Spanish Sea. So either it means the waters off Spain, or it means the waters in the Caribbean, which at that time was controlled by Spain. In any case, he describes it's poisonous, but the doctors know how to remove the poison from it, and then they make medicines out of it. So the question is, though, this creature has scales and no fins. Does it violate, and on the face of it, it lives in the water. Does it violate this rule over here about snapper? About that anything that has kaskesis has automatically a snapper. You see, that's not so. So the Tosfos Yomtev himself says that it's only That it's only the Torah's rule is referring to fish. In other words, things that have the basic body plan of a fish. This thing doesn't. It has legs, so that's something else. When the rule that it has chesed, automatically has snapper, refers to fish-like creatures, not to this kind of thing that has legs. And there was an enormous amount of discussion among Achronim in the few hundred years since then. Joseph Zemple lived in the 1600s, so in the 400 years since then, there's been an enormous amount of discussion among Achronim about ins and outs of that. Is that so? Are there other reasons we can say that this is not included? Maybe because it's poisonous, therefore the Torah doesn't ask for it, therefore the Torah's rule doesn't apply to it. Maybe this rule about chesed and not snapper is not absolute. Maybe it has exceptions. And the Sam Sofer says, never mind all that. The creature doesn't actually live in the water anyway. Even though it's called Marinus, it actually lives in the sand near the water. So it's not a sea creature in the first place, and therefore the question doesn't begin. They identify the stinkus Marinus as some kind of skink, which is in fact some kind of lizard. So it basically lives on land. Okay. Getting back to the Gemara. So we're saying that the rule is that if a fish has kaskestis, then automatically you know it has snapper, but not the other way around. So the Gemara asks, Mechtia kaskestis kasamchinen. Well, if the bottom line is, we have to rely on whether it has scales, because again, if it has scales, and we said automatically it has fins, then why does the Torah have to give us both? Lichtiv rachmana kaskestis, v'lai lichtiv snapper. The Torah could have just told us kaskestis, and it doesn't have to write snapper at all. The answer is ikos rachmana kaskesis for the kosef snapper. If the Torah did that, have amina, then you would have thought my kaskesis snapper, that actually the word kaskesis in the Torah actually does mean the fins. In other words, you would misunderstand. You would think that kaskesis means fins. And then vafilu dog tummy, then you would include all kinds of non-kosher fish that have only fins. Therefore, kos rachmana snapper the kaskesis. Therefore, the Torah writes both, and since one of them obviously means fins, then the other one necessarily has to mean, necessarily the other one has to be scales. Tosfos earlier in the Masechta, earlier in our Perek, in that Gemara and Nida, points out that you can't say also that it means that only one of them is good enough, the same way as the Torah tells us by land animals, two simonim, and it has to have both of them, the same thing as far as fish. Tosfos also brings up a point earlier in the Masechta that they refer to it over here, that the word kaskeses, here the Gemara is going to say soon that kaskeses means scales, and they learn it from a pasuk that refers to scale armor, but really the basic meaning of kaskeses could mean anything that's rough to the touch. So therefore, so it could fit fins as well, which after all are not quite so smooth. So that's why the Torah has to write snapper and kaskesis, and once we understand one of them is fins, then necessarily the other one, kaskesis, can only mean the only other rough thing on the body, namely the scales. In that connection, by the way, as far as the fins being rough, there's a famous medrash that says, and it talks about the Leviosim and the Shur HaBor, that before Mashiach comes, the Leviosim and the Shur HaBor are going to have a fight to the death, and then both of them are going to be killed in it, and then Hashem will serve them by the famous Sudas Leviosim. In particular, it says the Leviosim is going to shecht the Shur HaBor with its fins. So the question is, how could that be a kosher shechita? First of all, the fins are still attached to the fish, and we learned in the first parak of our Masechta that something that's attached in its original place of growth is possible for shechita. But besides that, the fins are not smooth. And the answer is that's going to be the famous Torah Chadosh and Eti Teitzei, that Hashem is going to give out a new psak of halacha at that point, a new dimension of Torah that we don't even comprehend now, that such a shechita is in fact kosher, and therefore the tzaddikim will be able to eat it. So there we see actually that the fins are in fact described as rough to the touch and not smooth like a shechita knife. So the Torah has to write snapper and kaskesis, because otherwise we would misunderstand. If it only said kaskesis, we would think it means the fins. So the question is, v'hash the kosher achmona snapper v'kaskesis. Fine, so now the Torah does write the word snapper and the word kaskesis, mimai de kaskesis levosho. Still, how does that tell us that kaskesis means what clothes the creature's body? Maybe the other way around. Maybe snapper means the scales and kaskesis means the fins. And for that matter, the question is then on that Mishnah and Nida, that anything that has kaskesis automatically has snapper, implying that we already know what it is. Well, then in that case, how does the Mishnah itself know that kaskesis means scales? And the answer is dichtiv v'shuin kaskasim hu lavush, because we find when Goliath came out to challenge the Jews to send somebody in single combat against him, and eventually David goes and takes up the challenge, then it describes he was wearing wearing armor of kaskasim, of scales. So therefore, we understand that kaskasis means scale armor. It's not like the word of Tosfos asks in that Gemara and Nidus, or what did they do before Sefer Shmuel was written? And the answer is they knew already the Kabbalah, but now it was written down in the Torah, and now it was written down in a pasuk for us that kaskeses means scales. The Rosh points out, in those times everybody spoke Lashon Kodesh, they knew what kaskeses means, but for later generations who might not know that, then Shmuel wrote the word Basir and Kaskasim, making it clear that kaskeses means scales. Okay. Still, then the question is, so once we know that already, V'lichter Rachman of Kaskeses, will I lift of Snapper? Well, then we're back to the question, then why couldn't the Torah write Kaskeses and not Snapper? Now that we have the Pasuk in Shmuel, and again, before Shmuel came along, then everybody knew what Kaskeses was, so now we have no reason to say, like we did before, that Kaskeses conceivably could mean the fins, so then why not? So why does the Torah write Kaskeses, and why does the Torah have to write both? Why doesn't it write Kaskeses and not write Snapper? And now there's no possibility for misunderstanding. And the answer is Amar Rav Abahu, V'chein Tana D'Vei Rabbi Shmuel, Rav Abahu says, and it was also taught in a braisa from the Yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel, this is an example of Yagdil Torah V'yadir, that Hashem wanted to make the Torah great and glorious. In other words, it's true, it didn't need to say it, but like this, the Torah gives us many different ways of understanding what kaskeses means. You don't only have to learn it from knowing Lashon Kodesh and from the Pasuk and Shmuel. Now we have another way of doing it. So Yagdol Torah V'yadir. So it makes the Torah greater and more glorious to have that kind of detail. The Ritva explains, in other words, that since, as we said, old kosher fish, if they have kaskeses, automatically have snapper, then we're saying that. So first of all, we're saying again that it's a snapper Yagdol Torah L'hadira. But also that really he says that actually maybe also the snapper is also necessary for the fish to be kosher. The fact is, he said, if it has scales, it automatically has fins. But nevertheless, we could say that the Torah wants us to know the real reason what makes these fish kosher is in fact that it has both simonim. We talked about a few days ago, quite a big discussion among Rishonim and Achronim, whether the kosher signs are a simon or a siva. Are they just a sign that this creature is kosher, or are they the siva, or are they the actual cause for it being kosher? So according to the Ritva, this is an example of that these are the siva. Because it has these two simonim, it's kosher, and therefore the Torah writes the second simon, because in fact both of them are necessary. The Chassam Sofer brings in this connection, an idea from the Ramban, that fish that don't have fins and scales, fish that have fins and scales are able to swim high up in the water. They're able to breathe in more of the air, more of the dissolved air that's in the water over there. So therefore such fish also produce scale. They also produce scales to protect them from the to give away, to shed their extra body heat. As opposed to, he says, ones that don't have snapper kaskeses tend to be bottom feeders, as you see, for example, with catfish, and those kinds of creatures then are not kosher. Hashem doesn't want us to eat such creatures, but therefore, so now, according to that, then, the Chassam Sofer says, that explains, what's this Yagdol Torah V'yadir, Hashem wants us to know, why am I being matir to you, certain kinds of fish, and not others, is because by realizing how the fish's body works, by realizing that the ones that have fins swim higher up and therefore also have scales to go with them, whereas the ones that don't, then that helps clarify for us why Hashem wants us to eat certain kinds and not eat other kinds. So, in fact, Yagdol Torah V'yadir, and in fact it shows the Chochmah of the Torah to the Goyim as well. The Gemara continues, Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa, Mimash Mashinema Achol Es Sheyeshlo. Now, if the Torah is saying that you're allowed to eat the creatures, the fish that have fins and scales, Shemeani Al Tochol Es Sheyeshlo, then automatically that would imply, don't eat the ones that don't have. So in other words, if the Torah had just stopped there, if the Torah had only said, you can only eat the one, this is that Torah, the Kol Shema Mayim, anything that has fins and scales, then it would mean if a person eats a non-kosher fish, then he's violating a mitzvah saseh. And vice versa. The pasuk goes on to say, don't eat the ones that don't have fins and scales. Automatically, that would imply that you can eat the ones that do have fins and scales. So the Lomashnan, why did the Torah list both things, both the Esa and the Lois Esa? That's why it says in Raisa, Lava all the Esa the Lois Esa, that in fact if a person eats a non-kosher fish, or a non-kosher water species, then he's over on an Esa, and he's over on a Lois Esa. And in fact, actually, the Meiri explains, and actually, the Rambam writes this in his mitzvahs as well, that in fact the same thing is true also as far as the other types of creatures as well. A person eats a non-kosher animal, for example, he's over on a mitzvah asay that says eat only kosher animals, as well as he's over on a lois asay of not eating the non-kosher animals. Next, now the Braisa continues. We're gonna talk about, you know, now that we talked about fish, what about we have to deal with other kinds of creatures that live in the water? So we're gonna talk about different kinds of bugs and worms and things like that. Some of which grow in fish. So some of which grow in fish, or some of them which grow in water, and we have to deal with those. And in general, that's gonna get us into the dinim of what kind of bugs are and aren't mutter. This is gonna take us to the end of the parak. So the Braisa says, the pasuk says toichlo mikol ha-shabamoyim. The pasuk says you can eat of anything that's in the water. Matamad loyma. So why does it have to add those words eszet toichlo? These you can eat. Now Rashi explains, in other words, because the point is, because the end of the pasuk says oisam techedu. So why can't it say now? Rashi asks, so why is the Braisa doing that backwards? Shouldn't it be asking on the second techelu? But the answer is because the Braisa wants to be able to learn something from each one of them, from each one of these techelus, and therefore it starts by assuming that the one at the end of the pasuk is necessary legufoi, and then it's going to dash in the first one, and then we're going to go and dash in the second one as well. So in other words, the Braisa is more asking like a rhetorical question, not already knowing the answer because it's going to give a drasha from each part of it. So like this. Because we find the Torah mentions explicitly that there are certain kinds of psukim, that there is a pasuk, which the Gemara is going to deal with later on, which pasuk that is. There is a pasuk that implies that there are certain kinds of shlotzim that grow in the water. The mefurash, we have a pasuk that explicitly says that such things are mutter, which we're going to learn later on, and Daf Samach Zayin, we'll learn tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, what that pasuk is. The hitu is stam, and then you also have though a pasuk that mentions stam that certain things are mutter. So you could argue match the hitu from furish like hitu ela bekelim. Now when it's matter, as we're going to see in the continuation of the Gemara later on, that it means that what are we matter to eat is only ones that develop in kelim. So not ones that develop in bodies of water. But if you have a keli that you left the water stagnating there for a while, and eventually insects develop in it, then as we're going to learn tomorrow, you are actually allowed to drink the water with those insects in it. Maybe it's not a good idea to; they may not be very healthy for you. But it is mutter from the point of view of the dinim of kashrus. So you would think after hitu b'stam like hitu elabekelim. So maybe the second process also when it's saying stam is only in kelim. But what about? Now, what we're going to talk about as we go through the sugya over here, you're going to have ones that you find in bodies of water, and there the Torah clearly says they have to have simone tara, they have to have snapper freskeses, but then you have various kinds of water pits, and then you have kalim. So how do we know then? So in other words, you would think that maybe also the one that, so again, the Braisa is saying, why do we need the first Eszet Toichlu? Because without that, you would have said, just like we're going to have a pasuk, which we're going to quote tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, that says that you're allowed to eat bugs that grow in kalim, you would think the same way. Maybe it's only kalim and not even ones that grow in water pits. So, Menayim, Rabbis, Boris, Shichon, Amoris, how do we know to include that if such bugs are found in water pits? Bodas, shichin, and ma'oras are different kinds of water pits. Bodas are round, shichin are square or rectangular, or ma'oras are caves, meaning that they have a natural roof over them. So those also, how do we know a person is allowed to bend down and drink water from such water holes and not have to be worried about that there may be bugs in the water? So for that, we need Tama Bama Choichla Mikor LaShavamayim. For that, the Pasuk says, you can eat from anything that's in the water. So even though, so not just Kalim, but also those kinds of things, because they're stagnant pits. So they're not like Yamim and Nechalim. They're not like lakes and seas and rivers, which are moving water. So that's the point. In other words, so one of them tells us that you can eat them. So in other words, therefore the pasuk says twice. So therefore the pasuk is saying twice that you can eat. So one of them tells us that you can eat that. Now, so Rashi points out the second tochlu could not have yielded that drasha because when it says oisam techelu means only when they have fins and scales. The tochlu by itself, as that tochlu mikolah shemamoyim, is able to be darshan by itself, and it would say, and we would say, as that tochlu mikolah shemamoyim, it can eat anything that you find in the water. What kind of water? We're saying water pits and things like that. Then when it goes on to mention about snapper and kaskeses, then that would refer only by Yamim v'Nacholim, only when it's in the seas and in the rivers. So that tells us therefore that you're allowed to eat, that you're allowed to drink water with certain bugs in it, not only if it's in Kalim, but even if it's in those kinds of stagnant pits. The Rama Foshim will point out that, by the way, maybe when the Gemara is saying over here Shoicha v'Shoisa, that you can bend down and drink. And maybe it means that's what to bend down, because otherwise if you scoop up water from there, you may scoop up bugs that were actually on the sides of it, above the water, and as we're going to learn later on, those are in fact also, once they left the water, they're only mutter when they're in the water the whole time. Okay, so the Braiser says, Heichen hitcher b'kalim, well, where exactly do we find a heter for such creatures in Canaan? So this did, because the Pasuk says, the Pasuk says, this you can eat from anything that's in the water, and the Pasuk goes on to say that anything that has fins and scales in the water, like Yavav Vanacholim, in the seas or lakes or whatever, Vanacholim, and the streams and the rivers, those you can eat. So by Yavav Vanacholim, who defeats like Echo, the lesser of Echo. So therefore we learn from that only by Yavav Vanacholim, only if it's in the natural bodies of water, the seas and the lake and the seas and the rivers, then you can eat it only if it has the kosher symbols, the kosher signs, and not otherwise. Well, the Caleb, implying though that in Caleb, I forgot the last way, even though it doesn't have those simonim, echoil, then you're able to eat it. So from those words by Yamam van Cholim, we learn that you're allowed to eat them. You're allowed to drink water from Kalim, even if the water has bugs in it, if the bugs develop in the Kalim. Now we're saying that in addition, because the Torah starts off by saying and before it even mentions snap of the Kaskasis, then the same heter applies to Boris, Shichon, and Oris, those various kinds of water pits as well. Okay, so the Gemara says, how do you know? Maybe how do you know to darshan it that way? Ema b'kalim afagav de'islei lo teichel. Maybe on the contrary, maybe it means that you can't eat any kind of thing that's in kalim, even if it has snap of the kaskesis. Maybe the Torah is telling you on the contrary. If you have fish that developed in a kalim and have fins and scales, then you still can't eat them either. Maybe the Torah is telling you that you can eat fish only if you catch them from natural bodies of water. And Tosfos says in that case, then what would you do with this as that tochlu? So you could say, in other words, that maybe the Torah is telling you that it doesn't just have to be that it has to not just flowing water. You would say that, for example, Boris Shifan Amaris, the various kinds of water pits, which are stagnant water, then fine, the Torah tells you techelu, you can eat fish that grow in such places. But how would you know that you could eat? And you could eat even fish, even with fins and scales that are in kalim? Maybe the Torah is telling you that ones that are in kalim you can't eat at all. And the answer is lo snapper daidach. You can't think that way, because the pasuk says by yamim v'nacholim. The Torah says anything that has fins and scales, anything that doesn't have fins and scales, by yamim v'nacholim, in the seas and in the streams, mikol sheretz amayim, from everything that swarms in the water, then you're not allowed to eat it. So implying just the opposite, by yamim v'nacholim de lesa le'teichel. It means when it's in the yamim in the nacholim, in the lakes or in the streams, de lesa le'teichel. If it doesn't have fins and scales, you can't eat it. Kalim, the implication clearly is that if it's in Kalim, Afagav de Leslay, even if it doesn't have fins and scales, Echol, then you are allowed to eat it. So we do see, in fact, that it's clear from the Pasuk, therefore, that you are allowed to eat, fish that have fins and scales that are in Kalim, and in fact, we're saying not only with fins and scales, we're saying even if they don't have fins and scales, but they grow in the Kalim, then you're still allowed to eat them. And then from the fact that we have, that starts out by saying, we learn that the same heter applies to Boris, Shichon, and Ma'aris, to these various kinds of water pits as well. So one of the things that came up when they came up years back in the New York City water supply, where there were these little creatures, copepods, and there was a big question and a big Kashrus question about them. There's a big Kashrus question about them because they don't have fins and scales. When this first came up, there were quite a few Rabbanim who said that you do in fact need to filter water in order to, but there were Poskim who held, including I think the Rabbanim of Crown Heights, who said that it is fine because for either because in general they're not visible to the naked eye. Some of them occasionally are, but in general they're not. And in general, anything that's not visible to the naked eye is usually fine in halacha. But in addition, also there's the point that based on what we're saying over here, they grow naturally in the body of water, and therefore, depending on what kind of body of water we're talking about, then they may be mutter in the first place. So that's the Shem. We'll continue with this discussion tomorrow, discussing exactly how we learn it, and discussing there are yet other kinds of water sources that we can talk about when bugs grow in them. And we'll talk more about these dinim and finish the parak. That's the Shem.